So today we're going to be spending some time talking and continuing the sermon series. Thanks, Kevin. Genesis, the origin, and taking a look at the life of Rebecca. And as I mentioned in the e-blast and in the video, one of the things that the story of Rebecca's life is really long. It's in Genesis 24 through 28. And like many of the biblical narratives, her life is complicated, is difficult. But before we even get started with the sermon, because I actually asked y'all and invited y'all to do something, I feel like I should give y'all a chance to talk about those things, right? So on the back of your guide, or I think, what is it called, lyrics, there's some questions. And I want to give us a little bit of time to break up into small groups. You don't have to move, and only do what you feel comfortable doing. But in the next 5 to 10 minutes, give or take, I'll bring us back when I feel like the talking has kind of died down. I want you to reflect on these questions. Prior to hearing the children's story today, or reading Genesis 24 through 28, what were your initial thoughts about Rebecca? What adjectives and words would you use to describe her character? And if you did have an opportunity to read Genesis 24 through 28 in the last few days, what has shifted about your initial observations about the life of Rebecca? Okay, you guys have any questions about how to do that? I know y'all like to talk. And I know y'all like to see people. Because otherwise, you would have stayed at home. Right? So I'm going to encourage you all to share just what you think about Rebecca together. And beloved, there are no wrong answers, right? You could say, I don't know who she is. I don't know none about her. Whatever is on your mind, go ahead and share. So I'm not going to treat y'all like kids unless y'all don't do what I asked y'all to do. Then I'm going to have to start walking around and making sure y'all are doing the group activity. All right? So the time is starting. Begin to think. There are no wrong answers, but I like to hear the murmur of conversation happening. Amen? I can't hear y'all. I can't hear y'all. All right, because y'all going to have to talk back to me if we talking together. This is a conversation we doing here, right? Okay. All right. Go ahead. Mingle. Talk. And you guys can put them in the breakout groups online. All right, go ahead and finish that last thought that is on the tip of your tongue. And then what I want you all to do as you're finishing that last thought, I want you to look around to the people that you're talking with, and I want you to pick one person who can kind of synthesize what you all were talking about. Don't worry, I'm only going to pick about 2, maybe 3 groups at most. You guys are not that shy. We family, right? So I want y'all to think about that. And then I'm sure I'll have like 1 or 2, maybe 3 brave folks who want to share what they've been conversating and what's been stirring in their hearts and their minds about Rebecca. And then if I could have somebody from the media team just read a couple of observations that get put in the chat for our folks online. All right. Like we in class. Who's going to raise their hand? Whoop, whoop. Come on, come on, come on, because they won't be able to hear you. Can I get 2 more? All right, thank you, Kurt. Can I get 1 more? And it needs to be a lady. Non-personal, fellas, but we need to hear all of the voices. All right, come on, thank you. All right.
A couple things our group talked about was how the beginning of the story felt almost too much like a fairy tale, how it just kind of perfectly lines up in a lot of ways. We also noticed how Rebecca's, she's a strong woman. She certainly seemed to know what she wanted, that she was willing to go out of her way in the beginning, but also how she manipulated what was going on later with Isaac, and so that now we have the God of Abraham Isaac and Jacob rather than Abraham, Isaac, and Esau, and how God used that to fulfill his will.
I'm Linda.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you, Kurt.
So I think that we made the same observations about Rebecca in our group, how strong she was and how brave she was to set out to go marry a man far away and set out on her own. And then, but at the same time, and that she also was a woman, we thought, that listened to her heart. And I always think that what's in my heart comes from God, what rises up out of me. I guess that's not always true, but I think it. But she had that turn, just as Kurt said, and she became manipulative. She had an idea, and she stuck with it, and she really didn't care what Isaac thought. And then someone else in our group said how actually she was sort of the power behind the beginning of this great nation that would become Israel.
Thank you so much, Linda. Say thank you, Linda.
Hello, my name is Carlos. I was talking to my friends over there, and we were just discussing the story about Rebecca. Rebecca is like, we all know the story about Rebecca, right? She was the one who had Esau and Jacob inside of her, right? And then one day she prayed to the Lord. She's like, what's going on with me, Lord? Why am I have to be the place battle of these two nations? Until now, we remember that big battle, and it was a place. She was also later was kind of like confusing Isaac to bless Jacob, and she was part of the blessing to Saul. To me, Rebecca is like a place where the first battle started in the beginning, where it was a big battle right there in their womb, and so that's what we're talking over there about Rebecca. So that's what Rebecca means to me, like a place where the battle starts. So
thank you.
Maybe you can.
I appreciate that. Was there somebody who could say or mention some of the things that were said online? You guys, I'm good. You don't have to do that. I'm sure. Oh, yes, doctor. Doctor said. So you, when the doctor tells you to do that, you just listen, right? Thank you, Dr. Pamela. All right. Thank you, ma'am. All right. I will respect the wisdom that is there. All right. Were there any things in the chat, in the comments from folks online? No, y'all didn't want to talk back to us? We tried to include y'all and y'all didn't want to talk back to us? All right. Nobody? All right. Cool. So as we've kind of listened and looked at the story of Rebecca, we see and know that there's so much to her. Even as we've listened to all of the things that our beloved brothers and sisters have come forth to share, and when we look at the life of Rebecca, we know that she's not one-dimensional. She's like Donkey tells Shrek. She's got layers, right? The Rebecca that we meet in Genesis chapter 24 and the woman she becomes at the end of her journey in Genesis 28 seems like two different women. And it makes you wonder what happened on her journey that moves her to respond in the way that she does near the end of her journey. Rebecca's journey, like each of us, on our journey, it's not about reaching a particular destination, but about coming face to face with who we are and who God says that we are. All the while we're trying to navigate the world around us in the most authentic way possible, even as we deal with all of the social confines around us. As we heard in the children's paraphrase of the chapter 24 today, and I'm not going to read the passage today because I want you all to keep reading and digging into the passage. And it's like five chapters. So ain't nobody got time for that. right? And y'all don't want to hear me listen to read 5 chapters either, do you? I didn't think so. So as we heard in the children's paraphrase of chapter 24, we meet Rebecca at the well. And she'll encounter many wells throughout the course of her life. And as part of her mother's household, Rebecca, like all the other single women in her culture, would have to be responsible for going to the well to draw water. And as she comes to the well, almost like on cue, like they said, a fairy tale, we know that Abraham's servant has just prayed to God that this woman who would come would be a part of the clan, who would come and provide water for him and the camels. And as the narrative unfolds and the servant sees her and knows that she meets some of the requirements, being beautiful and a virgin by the way that she's dressed, he asks her for water. Rebecca is eager to serve. She doesn't think twice, but demonstrates a level of care and grace, a hospitality as she goes above and beyond. But not only providing water for him, but for the 12 camels that are with him, so that they can drink until they have had enough. And if you know anything about camels, you know that one camel could drink up to 20 gallons of water. Right? So that wasn't an easy task that she took. And that tells us that she isn't afraid of hard work. Even knowing and spending time to provide, even knowing that her spending time to provide for this stranger will take time, energy, and keep her away from her responsibilities that she had at the well. And while we don't know if it's because of her disposition, her nature, or if she's just been raised in a way that has taught her to center the needs of others over and above herself, or if she's been raised to care to see the needs of others, or if she's just been taught how to be hospitable, whatever the reason is, she's a woman who sees the needs and meets the needs of those around her. In Genesis 24, verses 23 to 25, the servant asks, "Whose household are you from? And do you by any chance have room for us to stay tonight?" And in her response, we learn a few things about her. We learn who she is, which is the granddaughter of Milcah, who married Abraham's brother, Nahor. Additionally, by her naming her grandmother as well as her father and grandfather, it helps us to understand a little bit about their family structure. And it may have been more matriarchal than patriarchal. Second, even though Rebecca understood cultural norms, she believes that she has a voice, a confidence, an agency to extend an invitation to a stranger. She knows, thank you, sweetie. She knows what resources are in her family's house, and she knows what she can extend to her family. She knows what she can extend to her family. Thanks, babe. This also demonstrates the way she takes care of all of those around her. After Rebecca responds to the unnamed servant and lets him know who she is, he says to her that he's come on behalf of Abraham. And this prompts her to run back to her mother's house to tell everyone everything that has just happened. And after she's done that, Laban sees the nose ring and the jewelry, and he runs out to the well to bring these guests back. And they prepare a place for them. But before the servant is willing to eat, he wants them to understand his mission. He's there on behalf of Abram to find a wife for his son Isaac. He goes on to tell how he prayed for God to give him a sign, and how Rebecca acted just the way that he prayed. And so in verse 50, Laban and his father, Bethuel, agree that this must be from the Lord. And they agree to let Rebecca become Isaac's wife. They pay the bride price by giving Rebecca's mom and brother all of these costly ornaments. And in verse 54, we learn it's the next morning And the servant insists that they leave right away. But Rebecca's mother and Laban, they think Rebecca should have a little bit more time to prepare for this massive journey. And what happens next is interesting. Because Rebecca's mother and brother, they invite her into the conversation to see what she would choose to do. And while that would seem like a very normal thing to us, it's a decision that wasn't really hers to make, but one that they created space for her to make, Within her mother's household, it was a decision which they believed she should have a voice and a choice. And so they gave her room to express her desires and her will. And in between verses 57 and 58, before she responds, in that space, they invite her to make a choice about her own future. Rebecca is given a choice to either remain or leave. A choice to stay with what is familiar, what's comfortable, what she's always known, or go to a place with a complete and total stranger, to a land and a place she does not know. In between those verses, I'm sure she had to weigh the weight of this decision, this major life change that would shift her entire life overnight. What would she do? Would she go from living under her mother's household to living into a place where she didn't necessarily know what it would be like? She had to wrestle with what it would be, not even knowing if she would even see her family again. And so she makes a choice. In that space that she's given to listen, she makes a choice. And as the children's story that David read to us tells us, she sensed that God was tugging on her heart, revealing for her that it was time for her to leave behind everything that she had known, her mother's household, and go to a place unknown. Beloved, at some point in our journey, we will sense it's time to leave. And the decision to leave, to go, no matter how exciting the future may look, is one filled with hope, but it's also filled with fear, anxiety, which is why it's a step of faith. Because what lies ahead is unknown. When we choose to say, we know what we're staying in. But when we choose to leave, we have no idea what lies ahead. That's why Hebrews 11:1 reminds us that faith is confidence in what we hope for, an assurance of what we do not see. And so she chooses to step into what she cannot see, holding on to the confidence in what she is hoping for. It's kind of ironic that this is the passage that I'm preaching on today, my last Sunday. And over the last few months, the weight of leaving this beloved community has filled me with a range of emotions, from sadness to fear, to anxiety, to peace, to anger, to excitement, to hope, every emotion from one to whatever it ends on. And regardless of when we are faced with the choice to leave a place, be it our family home as we're going off to college or to get married, a job, or to go and be a part of a new community, it's important that we give ourselves the space we need to grieve what was, to grieve what we anticipated, to grieve what we hoped for, and have space to hope for what may lie ahead. Also, when we choose to leave, we must remember that it means that there are those who stay behind. And that then becomes an invitation to those who remain to reimagine what they will do as someone takes their leave. It's what parents do when they become empty nesters, trying to figure out what will be the center and focus of their lives. And we know we can never really replace the essence of who has left, but that doesn't mean that we should close ourselves off from the opportunity of who might come. And so it's important, if you remain, to not self-protect, but open yourself to the opportunity of who and what God may be drawing into your lives and community. And as I said, as I've been processing my own leaving, I found myself reading the chapter in this book called In My Grandmother's House, and the chapter was called Leaving, right? And it says, sometimes God's grace and our own growth is in leaving things behind, right? And then Yolanda says that leaving is trusting in God. Leaving is a leap of faith with no guarantee that the situation you encounter once you have left will be any more life-giving. It's leaving, and leaving is an accepting that you may be capable and strong, but that your hurts as you walk out of the door are still very real. The lesson of leaving is not the destination, which you may never reach, but it's all about the journey ahead. Beloved, we must be reminded that to utter those words, I will go, takes an enormous amount of courage and faith and hope to leave whatever is behind, regardless of the reasons you leave it. As Rebecca chooses to go into the unknown, trusting that God will make a way, she receives a blessing from her mother and brother in verse 61 that says she will flourish and her descendants would overcome their enemies. She leaves. She marries Isaac with much hope and faith of what will be. And then they lived happily ever after. Not quite. When we see Rebecca again in Genesis 25 verses 21, it's 20 years later. And while Abraham's new wife has had 6 sons, we learn that Rebecca is barren. For 20 years, she's had to deal with the social stigma that comes to women in that society when you are barren. And given the magnitude of the promise given to Abraham by God that his descendants would number the sands of the earth, I can imagine the pressure to fulfill the promise spoken to Abraham that was put on both Rebecca and Isaac. And I'm sure that that pressure was even intensified all the more when they had to bury Abraham without him ever seeing the next generation. And that reminds us, beloved, that sometimes it is not our job to wait for everything to come to fulfillment. Sometimes we will leave this earth not knowing if the promises are fulfilled. But we must trust in the next generation and trust in God to guide them. In Genesis 25:21, Isaac prays on behalf of his wife. And we don't know if he waited like 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years, or if he prayed the entire 20 years. But it took 20 years for God to respond. And whether it was through decades of prayer followed by silence, and silence is a response from God, beloved. And that's a sermon for another day. Isaac and Rebecca remain committed to continuing to pursue the promise, even though they didn't fully know what or when it would happen. They continued to trust God. They don't do like Sarah and Abraham. They trust God. They trust the God who brought Rebecca into this unknown place. They trust God who provided a sacrifice on the mountain, as David shared about last week, so that Isaac didn't have to get sacrificed. They put their trust in God. Beloved, God doesn't always answer our prayers right away. And that's okay. Sometimes it can take 20 years to prepare us for what God knows is coming. As they said earlier, there was a wrestling that was going to take place. Because after Rebecca becomes pregnant, we learn that it will not be an easy journey for her ahead. I think we have this idea sometimes that when God grants our prayers, it will be filled with sunshine and blue skies ahead. But we would be foolish to believe and to think that we don't need rainy seasons as well. We're in a drought. We know that all too well that we need them both. That means we will live in a world where we will have pain and trials and tribulations. There will be times of rain, even when there will be times of storm and sunshine. And that's a part of our journey. The goal of the journey is not to be blessed and prosperous. That's not the goal. The goal of the journey is the journey. And on that journey, while it may not be easy, we do know that God continues to remain with us, even in the silent years. In Genesis 25, verses 22, it tells us that the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it's to be this way, why even live? After 20 years of waiting and hoping, Rebecca becomes pregnant, only to realize that there are complications in her pregnancy. And if you have ever spoken to a woman who gets the news that something is going on in her womb, it's a heart-wrenching moment. When I was pregnant with Caleb, I was going through a particularly difficult time personally and professionally. And during my second trimester, we learned that I had what was called placenta previa. And the doctors were concerned about the position of the placenta because if I went into labor, they were concerned I would bleed and die and lose the baby. And so they wanted me to be careful. So for 2/3 of my pregnancy, I found myself terrified, questioning and wondering what had I done wrong and what could I be doing better. I wanted God to answer my prayers. I wanted God to just heal and move the placenta. I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, but it never moved. But even in that unanswered prayer, God was still very much present, teaching me and helping me to learn how to find peace and relinquish control over something that I never had any control over anyway. It was a gut-wrenching few months that were only complicated by all of the family drama that was happening in my life. I ended up going on a leave of absence from work and being put on bed rest. And I didn't know it then because I hated not doing stuff. I like to be busy and moving. But I didn't know that that was a moment that would change the trajectory of my entire life. It made me begin to question so much in those silent moments by myself. And it was the beginning of a new season that was being birthed that I didn't even realize was being birthed alongside Caleb. As we listen to Rebecca lament in verse 22, when she cries out, does it have to, if it has to be this way, why live? We hear her pain, her anxiety, her uncertainty, and her wondering. Wondering if it seems worth it. And so she decides to do the only thing she knows how to do. She goes to God in prayer. And God begins to speak directly to Rebecca. The passage tells us, she went to inquire of the Lord in verse 23. And the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two people born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The elder shall serve the younger. After decades of silence, in this moment, she learns what was wrestling in her body. And she goes and tries to figure out what's happening. And she learns she's carrying two people that will be divided. And once the twins are born, we know the story. Esau comes first. He's hairy and red. And his younger brother comes behind, holding on to the heel, Jacob, which means heel bearer. So between hearing that her sons would represent two nations and that they would be divided, experiencing their wrestling throughout her pregnancy because it never said they stopped, and then watching them be born in the manner that they did, it made me wonder how it shaped Rebecca and Isaac as they tried to raise their boys. I wonder if they saw their children as rivals, as something at their rivalry, as something that was just inevitable and they had no control over, regardless of the choices they made. In verse 27, we learned that the boys become men, and we learn just how different they really are. Esau, a skillful hunter who likes to be outdoors, while Jacob is a quiet man who prefers to be inside. And Isaac takes the lead in creating a culture on how to raise the boys, because verse 28 tells us that Isaac loved Esau because he liked to hunt and Jacob liked to eat. That's what it says. You can read it if you think I'm like making that up. And so Isaac chooses to love Esau. And in choosing to direct his love towards Esau exclusively, Isaac is creating a divide within his own household. And it seems that Rebecca follows the lead and directs her love towards Jacob, not because of anything that Jacob does or didn't do. She just loved Jacob. And what we don't know is if she loved him because he was unloved by his father, or because he didn't fit into the mold of what Isaac wanted in a son. We don't know if she loved Jacob because of what she heard from God about her two sons and the younger one being the one who would take the lead. The passage is silent on why she chooses to love Jacob. But what we do know is that Isaac's initial choice to choose one son over the other creates this ongoing division between the sons, and even between him and Rebecca and their happily ever after. No two kids are the same. I could tell you that because I got two in the back who are super different. And each child needs something different. But I want to encourage us that regardless of how different our children may be or the ones that are put into our care, it's important that we're mindful of the family dynamics that we set up and how we think about how we preference or choose one child over the other, even if it's in how we praise one child over the other, because it begins to create different expectations for each of those children. Whether you have one or two or three, it's important to think about those dynamics. I wish there was a handbook on how to raise children, but there isn't. But one thing we do need to recognize is that when we have individuals, children, partners, employees, coworkers placed in our care, the thing about those relationships is they have this way of reflecting back to us our greatest flaws and weaknesses. And the question is, will we choose to enter into seeing those weaknesses as a place and an invitation from God to grow? Oftentimes, we won't take the time to look at these things, but we'll brush them aside instead of seeing them as an opportunity to grow. Which is not what happens in this passage. There's just more division. In chapter 26, we see Rebekah in the in-between years. And this has happened a little bit after Esau sold his birthright for a bowl of soup to Jacob. And we learn there's a famine in the land. And God directs the family where to go. And while they are there, Isaac is afraid. He's afraid that someone's going to try to steal Rebekah and kill him. And so he tells Rebekah to pretend to be his sister. And he tells everybody else it's his sister. And in his choice, he's choosing to protect himself. He doesn't see how his choice is leaving Rebekah open and vulnerable to a whole range of things that could happen. For her, for him to say that she is his sister and not his wife would mean that men could come and take her away. They could lay with her. They could rape her. They could marry her. But Isaac is concerned with his own life. He has little concern for her body, her life. And even though he's seeking to control both her body and life by telling everyone she's his sister, he's concerned about his own self-preservation. Whatever happened over the years, from him being the person who saw her and loved her and prayed for her, something has shifted, and it's all about self-preservation. He doesn't see her as a partner or equal, but as property even. He's got his beloved son already, and he uses her to fondle her on the side. But he's all about protecting himself. That was the way the Bible translated it, if you had a problem with what I had said. I don't fully know what happened to Isaac, but something shifted. And there's something about fear that hampers our ability to care and love for those in our life. Fear keeps people at a distance, making it difficult to truly see them. When we respond from fear, it puts us in a place of preserving ourselves and our own well-being over and against others. And oftentimes, it's those on the margins who end up paying the brunt of the responsibility for people's choosing to self-preserve themselves. And even though they discover that Rebekah is Isaiah's wife, something continues to shift in their relationship. Genesis 26 verses 12 through 14 tells us that Isaac goes on and he continues to increase in wealth and possessions. And he moves his family from well to well to well as he's amassing this wealth and livestock. And while there isn't anything wrong with wealth, I can't help but to wonder how all of these blessings are shifting and changing this man of God who used to seek after God. I can't help but wondering what this has done between the two of them. I wonder how she felt, if she felt used, if she felt exhausted, having given up everything she's known to caretake for everyone around her, only to be kind of tossed to the side and told that she can be expendable. I can't help but to wonder how these in-between years have shaped the woman that we will meet in Genesis 27, 60 years after we first met her. And that's when we hear about the story about how Isaac makes this decision, again, out of fear that he's about to die. And I think maybe on another day it would be kind of interesting to explore Isaac's trauma, because he did have like this really near-death experience that David talked about last week, which tells us, beloved, trauma is real. And we have to actually deal with our trauma. Because if we don't tend to the trauma that has happened in our life and the generations before, it will continue to perpetuate, which is what we see happening. And we don't see God prompted by, we don't see Isaac prompted by God to go ahead and do this blessing. He takes it on his own accord. And he makes this decision that he's going to bless Esau. He wants to know who is going to be in control when he leaves. He doesn't seek God for guidance. But he goes into this room, calls Esau to himself, and they make this arrangement. He's protecting himself. He's protecting what he's built. He's protecting his legacy. And then we know what happens. Rebecca overhears, and she makes a choice to help Jacob deceive his father, to take the blessing that was intended for Esau. And as the narrative unfolds, you see what happens. Jacob is upset. Esau is upset and he wants to kill his brother. Rebecca sends Jacob back to her family's house to protect both of her children because she doesn't want to see either of them die. And while there are many things that we could talk about in Genesis 27, the one thing I do want to focus on is Rebecca. And I know and I get why so many people would describe her as deceitful, manipulative, and controlling. I would have done that 10 years ago as well, had it not been for the in-between years. While it's easy to say that Rebecca is wrong for what she's done, I can't help but to wonder what choices do folks on the margin have when all their other power has been taken away? What happens when you have been devalued and ignored for so long? What do you do when you are deemed no longer useful and treated as a commodity to be used for the others? How do you act when your livelihood is not considered, when you are treated like your life doesn't matter? What do you do? What do you do when no one is asking you what you will choose for your life or giving you the space to choose and use your voice? What do you do when you feel like you're losing your voice and your agency and you are beginning to fade into the background of your own life? How do you function? What do you do? What do you do when you've put the interests of everyone over and against yourself and now you don't know what to do? I believe she recalls what it was like when she grew up in her grandma and mother's house. I think she thinks back to the time and remembers who she is, that she's a confident and capable woman, able to make decisions and choices, instead of continuing to relinquish control to those who did not see or have her best interest in mind. She begins to use subversive ways to deal with the situation. And I know, when they go low, we're supposed to go high. But what happens when going high isn't an option? What happens when all you can do is what you have at your disposal in order to subvert what is happening? I can't say if her choices were right or wrong. That's a conversation for another day because I don't think it's about it being right or wrong. Rather, I think it's an invitation for us to look at the context, to look at the situation, and look at what made her make those decisions and her choice to try to disrupt the status quo. She wanted to disrupt and interrupt what was happening, to call attention to the problems that she was seeing in the only way that she knew how. And we can call her shady and deceitful, vengeful, selfish, and any other number of code words that we use to cause harm to people. But I think she had no choice but to use subversive means in order to follow the things that God shared with her earlier on. We don't know how many times she tried to get Isaac to see what God had shared with her. What we do know is that she makes the choice to stop caretaking and to disrupt. She makes the choice to be subversive. She makes the choice to try to keep both of her children alive. Beloved, I'm not in any way, shape, or form telling y'all to go out, be deceitful, be manipulative, and you better not say Pastor Tracy said you could. That's not what I said. Rather, it's an invitation to discern, when do we need to disrupt some things? When do we need to be like Jesus and turn over some tables? When do we need to subvert some things because the systems are just not right? It's an invitation for us to interrogate our lives, our churches, our communities, and those things around us to see the ways in which power corrupts. 1 Corinthians verse 1, 27 through 29 reminds us that God chooses what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chooses what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chooses what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing the things that are, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God. God doesn't punish Rebecca, but he highlights what seems to be weakness and highlights what is being made strong. God uses those who are seen as low and despised in the world. God uses this situation to humble those who would boast, those who would stop seeing. The life of Rebecca helps us to see these things and invites us to recognize the journey of facing ourselves, but facing ourselves not alone, but in the presence of God, in the presence of God, and in the context of community. Beloved, I hope and pray that in the next season, whether you find yourself in a season where you feel a tugging to leave, or you are the one being left behind, whether you are navigating the weight of carrying a promise that has caused you to wrestle within, or whether God is calling you to disrupt and subvert some practices, whatever and wherever God has you, I hope that as you journey, you will continue to seek the face of God, to see how God is revealing more and more of where he is moving you towards. I hope and pray that we find our way back to who we truly are, so that we can live more authentically as God says we are. As the worship team comes to sing our last song, I think there are some reflective questions on the back that I'm going to encourage you to think about. Do you need this mic back, James? Okay. What do you think Rebecca's inviting you into? What are you learning from her life? What does it mean for you, for New City Community, for our community, for the world? What is God inviting you to learn from the life of Rebecca? I'll leave you in the hands of the worship team. Amen. God, we thank you that you continue to see us and you continue to journey with us. God, I pray that like Rebecca, we will choose to continue to follow you, even into the unknown places. God, may we continue to follow you even when it gets difficult, even when it rains. May we follow you. God, I pray that you would help us to figure out what it means to follow you when it's difficult, when we feel like we've lost our power, when we feel like there's a wrestling within. God, help us to figure out how to continue to follow you in all of the seasons of our life. May we continue to seek after your face and follow you with our whole hearts. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.